Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wife Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions you would like to ask during this broadcast, please feel free to write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. So before I introduce my special guest tonight, I will mention to you that I'm in the process now of wrapping up and sending in our book, Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Volume 3. The first one came out back in 2005, and the second one came back in 2010. And so it was time for a new edition, for new stories, for new people to tell the struggles that they go through in these marriages. And the women who wrote for this book, who are very generous in giving their time and putting their words together to talk about the turmoil and the pain that they've lived through, come from all parts of the world. There are stories from here in the United States, but there's also going to be stories from people everywhere in Canada, Australia, Ireland, in the Netherlands, and from South America, from different cultures, to show that pain is universal when you're living through these situations. One of the women who was kind enough to participate in this endeavor is my guest tonight, Megan. Megan, thank you so much for returning to the show, because you're always inspirational. I always get wonderful comments from people on how you inspire them.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Yes. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show prior and telling your story and some of the ways that it impacts people, because now you and I have discussed several different issues over the past year. One of them is, and I think that it's important for women to know this also, to understand that many times when you're in these marriages and you're, you know, just walking blindly through them, not understanding why your marriage is failing, how painful that is to a woman who is trying everything possible to be a good wife. And I think all of us are, you know, we go through these feelings of feeling inadequate, that we can't understand where we're going wrong. Did you go through that in your own marriage?
Definitely. You know, you don't know, you're the blind side. You don't know why there's so much anger in the relationship and why there's such a disconnect. And I was married for 20 years and, you know, I couldn't figure out what was going on. And, you know, that's like the worst part. There's such betrayal and there's no honesty and there's communication, and the deception is really the hardest to handle. The lying and the deception and the deceit is terrible.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when you're trying to get through this and you're trying to navigate it and you just don't know day to day, what is the problem? It just,
right.
To me, when I'm reading these stories, Megan, including yours, I mean, terrible, terrible stories. I think some of the worst stories I've heard, and I mentioned this in the book also, I had one woman who loved her husband so much, as we all do when we get into these marriages. And, of course, it didn't take very long before he started sexually rejecting her because he's a gay man and he doesn't want to have sex with her. So he
mm-hmm.
would look at every possible excuse to make her feel inadequate. Now, the one that just mm-hmm. hurts me so badly when I think about it and I remember is how she would tell me that he told her that she smells and she has a bad body odor. And every day she would sit and scrub herself. She said, I would sit in that shower for hours. I would scrub myself. I would use all different kinds of lotions and soaps, you know, hoping that something would appeal to him. And every time she got into bed with him, he would say, get away, you smell. You have a body
yeah.
odor. Or you smell down there. Or, you know, you're
yeah.
repulsive because of that. And how are women supposed to feel when they have to have this kind of disgusting rejection because their husbands just can't be honest? You know, when I think about how many nights you go to sleep crying and wondering, why can't your husband love you like, you know, he's supposed to be loving you? Why can't he make love to you? Why isn't he touching you? Why isn't he tender with you? I mean, to me, it's always
right.
called breaking the feminine spirit and just destroying it so that you just don't want to ask anymore. Did you find yourself
right.
in that position also?
Right. That's really a sad story. It was different. It was a little different because he was married before. He had a child. Then we were married. We had a child. I'll be honest. We were very close. I mean, I had no signs of anything that he was gay. I had no clue. And it just honestly, just the last, I guess, year of, you know, 20 years of marriage, he just shut down. And that's when he just, you know, just didn't want to touch me, didn't want to hold my hand, didn't want to go near me. But, you know, he was actively involved. I mean, he had a lover. He had a boyfriend for 3 years. That,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was totally out. He was, you know, sleeping with men. But, I mean, it was like, as I said, it was just like a bull in a china shop. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but he acted, you know, heterosexual. I didn't really see the signs. Looking back, only the last, you know, year that he was, you know, or even 2 years that he was involved with this lover, but he was just putting on a show. He was putting on an act. He was going through the motions and pretending that he was a heterosexual. And that's the part that I still just can't come to terms with. I don't understand it because he's out. He's openly gay. He's still with his lover as far as I know. And this is a life he's wanted, but it took him two wives, you know, 20 years of marriage to me and two kids and two families to do this. And that's the part that I still don't understand, how someone could just be living a lie and not having any remorse and without any explanation. To this day, I do not even have an explanation. And I have not spoken to him in years, and I don't plan on ever speaking to him again. I mean, I've cut ties, completely cut all ties. But
which part of it didn't you understand?
I personally thought he was having an affair. I mean, when I saw that he was such a disconnect, and there was, you know, he was he had such hatred and anger, I thought he was having an affair with a woman. I really did. This was the furthest thing from my mind. And I still, to this day, now I'm accepting of it, and I get it, and I'm, you know, I'm looking back, I see certain mannerisms that he had, not necessarily sexual mannerisms, but more just of his interest in his own physique and his, you know, looking in the mirror and, you know, kind of meticulous about his looks and about the house and certain things like that, but not the physical part of it as much as the, like, the more the feminine side of it, you know, the artistic side of it, the personal appearance side of it. Yeah. My situation was, I guess a little different. I didn't feel that rejected physically as much as I felt very rejected emotionally. If that makes any, you know, there was a much more of a disconnect emotionally than the physical part of it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the last week,
well, there are some husbands who will continue on, and they will have sex with their wives. I won't call it making love to their wives. I'll call it having sex with their wives, because they can, because they feel they have to, you know, keep the premise going. I certainly know men who can do that for 20 years or more. They may not do it with great frequency or with great passion, or you may think it's good because of lack of really maybe sexual knowledge from the past, or because they're able to fantasize and put on an act. But once again, I wouldn't call it great sex. I haven't heard that too much from too many women. I mean, they can perform sex, but, you know, it's like they're performing it, but not necessarily with you. Because if there's an emotional disconnect, then physically there's going to be somewhere a disconnect. You know, even if they can't perform the sex, you know, it's like a performance. And they do that to keep up the pretense. But, you know, as far as the stereotypical problem that we have is that we, in our own minds, just like our gay husbands, have a perception of what gay looks like. And we have that perception from watching television and watching movies and seeing people who are effeminate in gay parades. And so to us, that equals gay. So if you have a husband who's, you know, like yours was, mine was a martial artist, you know, kung fu teacher, big strapping guy, you know, who looked like Sylvester Stallone when I met him, which really attracted me to him, you know, but he'd be the last person I would ever think that would, you know, be gay. But I think also we don't understand gay. I mean, to us, why would somebody gay want to marry somebody straight? And especially, you know, your husband had a wife prior to you, right? So why would you even think along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, what triggered it? What, I mean, I still think that, you know, he was hiding this his whole life. I have a feeling that, you know, it obviously, he came out when his Italian, you know, domineering father passed away, but he was acting on his sexuality. He was cheating on his family. He had a lover for years, but he was waiting for the day, you know, father to die. And then that was it, you know, and, you know, once again, you know, he wasn't that flamboyant type. He was, you know, he was a politician. He was a lawyer. He was a judge. But that was also, you know, a lector in the church. He was hiding behind a totally different persona. I mean, people thought he was the ultimate family man, you know. He's like, and it was, you know, we had a family of three kids between the two of us. It was a nice thing. And, you know, the part that is also upsetting is just like he threw it all away without any explanation at all. And, you know, I don't understand why it took him
why he actually decided to get married for the second time. That mm-hmm. why would he? Does it make any sense to me?
It's very possible because he wasn't ready to lead a gay life. A lot of them are fighting it. Maybe he needed a cover for business or for the church. He said he was involved in the church.
Right.
And also the fact that, you know, it might have helped his practice professionally.
Right, exactly.
And maybe he was just hoping against hope that he wasn't gay. You know, I really do believe a lot of these men go into marriages.
Yeah.
They don't have ill intent. I know our women don't feel that way. And in some cases, they are right. I'm not going to say that certainly doesn't happen at all. It does happen. Sometimes men know they're gay, but for whatever reason, they want to get married because they need it for their career. They need it for their family. They need it for their church. They need it to create a front. So, I mean, I understand that, but I really believe in my heart that almost all of these men marrying women, they really want to be straight. I'm not saying they don't know they're gay or they don't know they have male attractions. Of course they know that, you know, but they don't want to have them. They want to just be, quote, normal, unquote, as they look at it, like everybody else. And that's really understandable. And I think the confusing part with gay is that there's no clear-cut road to gay. Some people know from the time they're children, this is what I am. I could never be straight. Some of them, like I say, when they're 5 or 6 or 8 years old, they know this is who they are. But others are confused because sexuality isn't always clear-cut when you're younger. You know, it becomes more defined as you get older. But those who are younger can, you know, they see a woman and they think she's wonderful and I'd like to live with her forever and she's beautiful and I love this woman. And then you can have an erection because, you know, you're young. And when you're young sexually, you can probably do anything. And so they get confused and they think, you know what, I can do this. I can pull this off. You know, this is the life that I want. I don't want that other life with those gay people. And because up until, you know, recent years, gay was so rejected anywhere in the country. You know, even when it was accepted, it was rejected. And, you know, people are always making fun of gay people and discriminating against them and families and religion, culture. You know, certainly some cultures don't even allow you to be gay. So, you know, it's very, you know, ridiculous, but that's the way it is. So you don't have choices. So it's easy to see somebody can perform and does can have a piece of that pie why they want it. But, of course, it's only a matter of time until it all falls apart because they're gay. And they can pretend the role of being straight, and they've had practice their whole lives because they've been around straight people, so they know how to act. They know not to act because they don't want people suspecting they're gay. But they don't understand it totally because, as I always say, gay men do not think straight. And that is certainly not a put-down. It's not a slap-down. It's not an insult. It's a reality. I don't think the way a gay person thinks, and they don't think the way I think. And that's okay. We don't all have to think the same. But with a gay person, they think they're pulling off this act, but it's only an act. And it's only a matter of time until, you know, they can't do the act anymore.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sorry.
Yeah. No.
Do you agree with
that? Yeah, I do. And, you know, I looking back now, I'm thinking, you know, his best friend in college, who was actually the best man in our wedding, you know, had never gotten married. I always had my, you know, I think, you know, he's probably gay. He had certain, you know, he was definitely a closet gay. I don't think he knew he was gay or whatever. He never acted on it. But he definitely, you know, had no interest in women or in getting married. And I remember mentioning, you know, not that it was a negative thing, but I was mentioning it, you know, we'd go visit the guy and it's just like his best friend. And I'd say, you know, I have to say, I think he's gay. And, you know, he would jump down my throat, like almost like, how dare you imply that my best friend is gay? I'm like, I'm not implying anything. I think he's gay. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing.
Right.
It seems like he has no interest in women. He's never been married. He never brings a date. He, you know, came to our wedding by himself without a date. It was obvious. And it's just funny how now I'm looking back and I think, you know, you know, now he obviously can confide. They can confide in each other. They can compare experiences or whatever. But it's like, you know, why not just come forward and say, you know, yeah, like it's like they're not, you know, he's afraid to admit that his best friend's gay. What's the big secret, you know? I don't know. It's confusing. The whole thing, looking back now, is very confusing to me. Because it was like he was covering up for his friend because his friend was gay and he probably knew it. But there's no
way to... Because what happens is that you think your friend's gay, you're going to wonder why they're hanging out with gay friends. So first of all, they want to just put that suspicion on your part. That's what they do. They're in denial all the time for anything
right.
that would make sense.
That's absolutely... Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. It was like a cover-up, and he didn't want to admit it because then people would assume that he was gay if he was hanging out with a gay guy or that they were, you know, together because they acted like they were, you know, like always together. They did, you know, things together. And
that
knows,
was the
maybe
other possibility. I was going to tell you that you have to accept the fact that there probably was something going on with them.
That's what I'm wondering now. Probably was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Interesting.
So that's why he definitely would not want you to know he was gay.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well,
that's another thing that women have a really hard time believing, and I wrote about that also in this book. A lot of times their husbands will say to them, I've never done anything yet, you know, while they're getting ready to leave. You know, I've never done anything yet, but I just know that, you know, I'm gay. And they'll say, you've never tried anything, no, nothing. Well, I don't believe it. Based on my experience with thousands of gay men who I've worked with over the years, every one of them tells me that they've tried something, except for one. One out of 4,500.
Right.
And that one, I totally believe he didn't. But, I can't let one be the exception for the rule. So as a rule, these guys are out there doing stuff.
Yeah,
and I know that also based on the percentage of women in our, you know, my past along the way who have told me they have sexually transmitted diseases.
Right.
And the worst ones are the ones that have these diseases as the husbands insist, well, you must have been sleeping with other guys if you have a disease. You know, they can't even take responsibility. You know, they have to blame their wives on top of it. If it's not bad enough now you have the sexually transmitted disease, you must have done something to get that disease.
Right.
And how dare you to cheat on it.
Exactly.
And
it's all that.
Oh, my God, what they go through.
No, mine was actively, I mean, I figured it out. I mean, as I said, he had a boyfriend for 2 years before I even discovered that, you know, he was gay. And he had been all over, you know, Manhattan with different groups and meetups and gay things. I mean, I have no idea how he could find the time because, you know, he had a full-blown, you know, practice. He was a politician, but he was all over the place and for years. And I think, you know, once he found his lover, you know, maybe he calmed down slightly and, you know, and that was when, you know, he had no out. At that point, he had to come clean and he had to, you know, get divorced and, you know, that was it. I mean, I don't know how much longer he could have lasted with that kind of, you know, double life that he was having. It's pretty insane, you know, but I think he was actually starting to really lose his mind a little bit. And, you know, he was going on like anxiety drugs. And I mean, he was just off the wall because he was hiding everything and hiding it from his family, hiding it from his kids, hiding it from me. And it was, you know, he was at the point of that was it. Like he couldn't live like that anymore. And he said, you know, when I figured it out and I said, how could you do this? He basically, like you had said before, they can compartmentalize anything. And he said, you know, it was unbelievable. I could go out. I could be sleeping with men. I could be doing whatever and go to the gym and be in the sauna with a guy and come home and sit at the dinner table. And it was like, I could have done anything. I just was like doing it and not caring about it. I didn't have a conscience. He said to me, I didn't even have a conscience. I knew what I was doing. I knew it was, but if I could do it, I would have done it. I would have done it again. That's the part that's so sick. I would have done it again. Because I was coming of age and I was coming to a time in my life where I was 60 years old and I had to prove my masculinity. it's a little ironic, that masculinity when you're coming, when you came out of the closet. It's a strange way of putting it, but that's what he said. Yeah. He thought it was masculine.
They're able to compartmentalize a lot of things. And, you know, the worst thing is that they don't feel a sense of remorse or guilt for doing it. You know, they don't feel bad about it. And if anything, they feel bad that they're still living there. And I think that's what women need to understand. When they get so frustrated and they get angry at you and they're blaming you for everything, it's because they're tired of being there. And they're blaming you for their unhappiness that they created themselves. You know, you didn't force them or drag them into marriage. You didn't sit there and beg them and say, please marry me or I'm going to kill myself. They wanted to marry you. So now, once they're married to you, they feel you've trapped them in there and you're the one responsible for their unhappiness, and they wouldn't be so unhappy they could leave their gay life. You know, and they start blaming you for all of this. And so that's where I think the communication, the breakdown starts. Like you said, in your marriage the last couple of years, it really started breaking down. Well, he was already seeing somebody. So you were like the person who was keeping him in prison. You know, he found the life he wanted, but he couldn't go live it because he blamed you.
Right.
You were the one.
Right.
Not him.
Right.
He's not the problem.
Right. And
you were the problem.
Right. Right. And he was such a coward that he couldn't come clean, just, you know, sit us down, sit my family down and say, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. I will take care of you no matter what. It was just a fight, a bitter fight till the bitter end. And, you know, being a lawyer and a judge didn't exactly help my case in a no-fault state. And, and the thing about it is, like, I'm the one that kicked him out of the house. And he, you know, he left. And, you know, he should have been the one to say, I'm going to leave. I can't live this life anymore. I've been cheating. I've been lying. I do anything. It was like, and I still, as I said, it's been now 2.5 years. And, you know, with this pandemic, I'm clear across the country. And hopefully I'll never have to see him again in my life. But it's that, you know, it's amazing. These people can sleep at night. And to know that what they've done to their family and their kids is just utter destruction. They don't care.
Yeah, but they don't.
You know?
But they don't think they've done that. See, that's where you're wrong. I told you, gay men don't think straight. So they're not thinking, oh, look how it's hurting my family. They're not thinking, look what I did to my wife. They're thinking, look how good I was to my family. Look how good I was to my wife. I could have left years ago and left them stranded. But instead, I stayed here and I waited till they were older. And I had to live this life and I had to be unhappy and I had to be miserable. For them. And so they're not thinking that they're doing anything wrong by you. They're thinking about how much they've already done for you, and now it's trying for them to do for themselves. I mean, that's how their thinking is.
No, it's a very good point. It's just, it's hard to think that way, but you're absolutely right by what you're saying. It's
well, that's because you're straight. So, yeah, it is hard to think that way.
Yeah.
We are straight women, so we're not going to think that way because that's not who we are.
Right.
But that's who they are.
And
they're gay men
feeling
trapped in straight marriage that they created themselves, but they forget that part. You know, they think, and that's the other thing that really bothers me, and I know that, you know, your ex is a lawyer and that, you know, you were in a no-fault state. But I've really done a lot of research on this lately, and I've seen that there's a number of states that are fault or no-fault where you have a choice. And I don't think our women are taking advantage of the fact that they could go for a fault divorce. Now, people say, well, you know, that fault divorce is a problem because you're making more trouble or making more problems. I don't really care. I mean, I just feel that none of this is ever going to be our fault. And as you know, I discussed before, that no matter what kind of wife you are, it wouldn't matter if you were the Wicked Witch of the West or you're the guardian angel of the East. It doesn't matter what kind of wife you are because they're gay men. They're not going to be less gay when you're nicer to them. They're not going to not have those thoughts just because you're very supportive of them. It won't matter what kind of wife you are. So there is fault here. That's why I don't look at these marriages like no fault, do you?
Right. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the no fault thing is upsetting because, you know, I still think that there is fault. I mean, you know, I would have stayed married for the rest of my life if he hadn't come out of the closet, you know, and I'm not going to stay married to a gay man. So that's the end of the story right there. I mean, that's no one should stay married to a gay man as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, and that's, you know, it's just one more problem with the system. And, you know, it didn't, from a legal standpoint, from a financial standpoint, it, you know, was not working in my favor. And, you know, it's like, at least if we could just, you know, at least if we could get something out of it and feel like there's
some
I don't want to use the word,
some justification. That's the word we're looking for.
Yeah. That's the word I'm looking for, justification. You know, because we know we're not going to get, there's no empathy, there's no remorse, but at least there should be some sort of, you know, justice done.
Financial resolve. And now I'm going to tell you the next problem. There are states where there are fault divorce. You have your choice of fault or no fault. But then another problem is most of these states where there's fault divorce, the fact that your husband, you know, if your husband's having an affair, that counts for you as far as fault. But if your husband's having an affair with a man, that does not count as cheating.
Oh,
and that's
goodness.
The other problem. And that's the other problem, that it only counts when he's having a relationship with a straight woman, not with a gay man.
Does that make any sense? It doesn't make any sense.
No, those are laws that definitely have to be changed.
Absolutely. I mean, now gays can get married, you know, in certain states. So if they can get married, then if they're having an affair, it's the same thing. If they're having an affair with a man or a woman, it's an affair. It doesn't, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check out the laws. I'm going to have to find that out. When a gay couple gets married, does it
count?
If
a gay couple gets married, and one is
cheating with somebody gay.
Does that count as an affair then? Because you're married and you're having an affair with someone of the same sex, but you're still married. That would be an interesting thing.
I'm definitely going to do research on this one because I didn't think about the gay aspect, but I will now that you brought it up. And I'll try to do research on that this week. But I certainly do know that when you're straight and your husband's cheating with you with men and you want to get the fault divorce based on that, that some states are just going to reject it. I've heard this from our women who have tried it. And I thought that this is really something that needs to be changed. It really
Absolutely.
Does. I mean, then you're getting screwed double again. Then again, you're not being treated the same as everybody else, right?
Right. You know, once again, they're in a win, like they're in a win-win situation. You know, like it's not. There's no justice there. It doesn't make any sense to me. You know, I mean, when I went through this, my lawyer at one point, you know, just wanted, you know, obviously cha-ching, you know, more money, more legal fees, you know, had gone for like a possibility of like an emotional abuse kind of thing, like that kind of a fault. And, you know, I tried to document certain things. I was thinking about it, but it's not like the guy pushed me down a flight of stairs. I mean, he pushed me down many flights of stairs, but it's very hard to prove mental abuse. It was really not mental abuse, emotional abandonment was the word that you can go for that, but it's very hard to prove, you know?
I definitely agree with that. You know, a lot of times I used to think to myself, my ex-husband was extremely emotionally abusive to me. I mean, he really did beat me down mentally to where I wasn't the same person I was when I married him. You know, he was looking for total control, so he was a rageaholic. And as I tell women, he would shout me down to shut me up. I mean, that was his M.O. You know, if I didn't agree with him, he would shout me down. If I try to express my own point of view, he would shout me down. And when I say shout me down, not just yell, but yell vulgar, horrible things at me, because they know how to find all of your weak spots and how to just, you know, hone in on that to make you feel lower than anything. And I used to say to myself, you know, I wish he would just hit me. At least if he would hit me and I could show people bruises, because they don't recognize the emotional abuse. You know, that's the problem with emotional abuse. People don't recognize that there's no black and blue scars on you. They're all on the inside, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I would be in tears like almost every day at the end. And, you know, my friends would be you know, come over, and they're like, what's wrong? And I said, all he does is scream and yell at me. He doesn't want to be near me. He doesn't want to talk to me. And they'd be like, oh, but he's so charming, and he's so lovely, and he loves the kit. Because on the facade, he put on the greatest show. I mean, it was an actor. He was a politician, you know. But behind closed doors. And then every time, like you mentioned this earlier, the nicer I was and the more understanding of a wife and the more giving and the more tolerant, it made things even worse, because I think he felt so guilty that I was all over him, like, you know, like a puppy dog, to please him and to placate him was the word. And he couldn't handle it, because the more I tried to placate and be nice, the more he wanted to push me away. Because it's like he just wanted me to say, screw this, you're an idiot, you know, I don't want to live with you anymore, go live your life, I'll live mine. And I wasn't doing that. I wasn't doing him that favor. And that's the other part that infuriates me, because it was such torture to put me and my kids through that, you know, day in and day out, instead of coming straight and clean and saying, I am sorry, I can't live this life, I'm doing this. And instead, it's like I just tried bent over backwards to keep him happy and to keep peace and quiet so that he wouldn't explode in the house and so that my kids wouldn't have to deal with it. And nothing was working. And, you know, it was years of that. It was years of that form of abuse. And, you know, looking back, I'm just like, thank goodness that's all. I mean, at least I could have peace and quiet, you know, at this point. I mean, it's not fun being alone, but it's a lot better than being with someone like that, for sure, you know.
Oh, yeah. I always say that the worst thing I felt like, that saying, walking on eggshells, I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was always walking on nails, forget the eggshells. Every time I put my foot down, a spike would go up it, because, you know, he was just so, you know, emotionally abusive. And yet these guys are players and they know how to play the game. And so as nasty as they can be, when they want something, they know how to be sweet and how to be nice to you. And so they learn how to fool you into thinking that things are changing and getting better for the moment. But then once they get what they want, that's the end of it. You know, they're back to themselves. Did you find that pattern also?
Oh, absolutely. And once again, like the, you know, he was a trial attorney. So it was like, it was always an argument. Like you think you mentioned your husband too, is everything was a fight and argument, and he had to be, I think, cause his life was so out of control, you know, and as I said, he was, you know, having an affair. He was, had a boyfriend, he was fooling around. Things were so out of control. The way he could control things were by proving that he was right about the stupidest little thing. He had to always argue a point. And he'd, ad nauseum, he would argue a point until I would just finally concede and say, fine, whatever, I don't care, you know, about anything. It, you know, it was nothing important. It was silly things. And the control, I guess, as you said, it was like just a matter of him trying to be in control of his life, because his life was so out of control.
Well, no, they have no control over their own life, so they're always trying to control our lives. That's the problem.
Right.
You know, when
right.
they can't control themselves, then they have to try to control us. And a lot of time that control revolves around keeping their secret, because they don't want people knowing. So they have to control the environment we're in. I know now in my particular case, mine was very alienating from many of my friends and family. In other words, if I had family come over, he would purposely start a fight so they wouldn't want to come back. If I had friends that came over, he would always start a fight so that people just didn't want to come back, because it was always unpleasant. So that way, he was good at isolating me and making sure that people weren't around me to find out his secrets. Did you ever have that or no?
That's so interesting, because, yeah, now looking back, you know, now some of my friends said, you know, you'd invite us over for a barbecue. And the strangest thing was, like, we'd say, we'll come at 5 o'clock, and he would literally be at the gym until, like, 10 to 5. And, you know, I'd be there cooking, scrambling, you know, getting things together, and he'd walk in the door from the gym and get in the shower, and it was the strangest thing. And then the people would come, and he always had to come down the stairs at least 15 to 20 minutes after they were already in the house. And then he started the argument, like, what are you making for dinner? Why didn't you put this out already? What? And it was like in front of them. And my friends would say to me now, they go, you know, it was weird. We'd always come over. We always felt like we were just like, whoa, like walking on eggshells. Like, when is he going to, what's he going to yell at her again for? And my family felt the same way. My family said, you know, we hated coming over for holidays because it was always you're doing all the work and he would just sit there and criticize you. And he just wouldn't lift the finger and sit in the corner and pretend that, you know, he was just like not even part of it. Like, it would be on his iPad. Like, he just had to socially distance himself. Like you said, to the point where people didn't even want to come over, didn't even want to be at our house anymore because it wasn't comfortable. It was never comfortable. It's funny that you mentioned that.
Yeah, well, that's how mine was. Mine also, he had this addiction to what, you know, Dr. Phil is the one who pinpointed this. Dr. Phil, I never knew about this, but I learned from him about addiction to chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Mine had to have chaos all around him all the time. He was always
exactly.
starting problems about people, bad-mouthing people. When people would come over, he would say, this one's a problem, that one's a problem. You know, you could
yep.
never have a calm day or you could just have a nice day without some problem coming up. And I didn't know there was really a name for that until I read it from Dr. Phil, Addiction to Chaos. That some people, and I think also this goes back to the fact that they can't have, you know, peace in their own life, so they have to create this chaos just to keep
mm-hmm.
control, because they have no control over their own internal chaos. So they're looking to start it everywhere else. And that's what happened with us every day. And, you know, look, I wasn't married long, but I was stuck with him for the next 25 years, even though we weren't married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when
mm-hmm.
you have children that you're raising together, it's not like you can just say, well, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. You know, unfortunately,
right.
you're tied in there together. Raising children.
Right.
So he was totally in my life, clear and present almost all of the time, long after that divorce was over. You know, you never felt like, I never felt I was divorced for years. I always felt
really?
I'm stuck in this, you know, with this guy. Well, because some of these guys don't like to let go.
Right.
And he didn't like letting go. He just wanted to hold on to me and, you know, keep controlling me, even though I had nothing, you know, I wasn't married to him. But he seemed to keep missing that point.
Right.
You know, he just still thought he could have control on my life. And also, I allowed it. You know, that's the worst thing, because I wanted to keep peace in the house, you know, as they call it. You know, I didn't want to have, you know, chaos going on for my kids. I wanted them to feel, you know, there's not shouting and screaming all the time. So I gave in to him many times when I should have just hung up the phone. And I always tell women, do not follow in my footsteps, please. Don't learn from my lessons. That you have to learn when to say no, say goodbye, I can't talk to you, figure out another way. Because I just let him manipulate me long after that marriage was over. And it's true, we had problems within the marriage, and he had gotten AIDS. And, you know, I was a sympathetic ex-wife. You know, because he was the father of my children and I couldn't abandon him or, you know, there was one craziness after the next craziness after the next craziness. And, you know, like I say, the craziness just never ends with somebody who's crazy to start with.
The chaos, so true. Looking back, and you know, it was always chaos in the house and drama, and it wasn't a normal day if there wasn't something that went wrong, you know, whether
it
be like,
exactly.
you know, and it was, and you know, this is the role model. This was the role model for my kids, which was a terrible role model because, you know, it was just, I can't find this. Where are my keys? Where's my jacket? Where's my phone? You know, and then it would be like, well, why didn't you do that? And it was always, it was just chaos. And I have to tell you, I'm looking back and I thought it was just kind of a normal life and it was chaotic and it wasn't good unless it was chaos. It's like exactly like you said, if every day there was not some kind of chaotic, you know, whatever that went on, he'd find the chaos. You know what I mean? It would like, he would create chaos along the way. And
mine too. Mine just couldn't have a day of just having a quiet, nice day.
Yeah.
You know,
no.
he had to always, you know, he was involved with a whole bunch of people because he had his own mini cult. It was just like a mess all the time, knocking this one, you know, putting him down. And, you know, this one's screwing him, that one's screwing him. Everybody was screwing him.
Well, that was exactly it too. And, you know, he was dealing with these, like, you know, clients that were, you know, a lot of them, he was a criminal defense attorney. So a lot of them were crooks, you know, or they were, you know, just not above board people and, you know, complaining that, oh, they didn't pay me or, oh, they didn't do this or, and everything.
Exactly.
Was always, everyone else's fault. And he was always the victim and he was always the one getting, you know, screwed by somebody else. It was never his fault, but a lot of times it was his fault because he wasn't doing the right job or he wasn't doing, you know, wasn't doing a good job and people were disappointed in his behavior, but he could never admit that to himself. You know, he'd never take responsibility for his actions, bottom line.
Mine either. Couldn't. Mine never did the yeah. day he died. He never one time, maybe one time, he said two times out of almost 40 years, you know, with or without him, but together. You know, he said
right.
to me he was sorry and he was wrong. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, even as he was dying, because in his last year and a half he had terrible cancer, I hadn't even talked to him for 2 years. I cut him dead finally. I finally said, that's it. Goodbye. You're gone. I don't want to hear from you. I blocked him from everything. But, of course,
yeah.
he snuck a message to me the last 18 months that he's dying of cancer and that he forgives. He wants me to, he hopes I could forgive him. So I did feel bad, and, you know, because he did ask me to forgive him. So when I contacted him, I said, I'm really sorry you're sick. And he says, well, I didn't want to die without, you know, telling you that I'm sorry. You know, I'm really sorry. Well, he was really sorry because he had really screwed me really badly and done terrible things to me really bad the last couple of years. And created a lot of problems and a lot of trouble for me. But, you know, he was willing to try to make those amends. And at least give me the information of people who were trying to destroy my life outside, you know, the gay straight thing. So he said that, you know, he'd been involved with them. They got in touch with him and, you know, he gave me all their information. But even when he was apologizing to me, he was still saying to me, and I forgive you for what you've done to me too. And I said, well, what have I done to you? You know, like, okay, you're going to forgive me for what I've done to you? He says, well, you said a lot of bad things about me. I said, well, I don't ever say anything bad that's not the truth, you know. Well, that's your opinion, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that was the best I could get from him for an apology. But, you know, they're not really sorry. They're not sorry. That's the problem.
No, absolutely. They're not. Even on his deathbed, he wanted an apology from you. When
I know. I'm so upset.
He
didn't even make just one apology to me. He had to have a little hook on it. Okay, I'm going to forgive, you know, I want you to forgive me. But on the other hand, I'm going to forgive you also.
Right.
You have to tell me you're sorry, too. It's always that way. It was never just, he could never just say, I'm sorry. He would say, now, are you sorry, too?
Yeah, there's always a but.
When we were living together, it was the same thing. When he was wrong and he would have a fight with me, he would say, okay, I'll say I'm sorry if you say you're sorry.
Right.
But I didn't do anything, but I still had to say I was sorry, you know.
It's so true. It's so true. It's so true. Yeah, there's always it's always about them, right? Always, but goes back to what their needs are, goes back to what they want, goes back to their control, you know.
And it goes back to if you're feeding their needs because they are all narcissists. You know, let's face it, that's what they are. I mean, mine was a sociopath and a narcissist.
Yeah.
So he went
mine
beyond
was,
the narcissist. But, you know, like I said, there is a difference, but they have similar, you know, characteristics as far as, you know, how they can be charming and how they can get you caught up in stuff and how people always think, oh, you're so lucky you're married to such a great guy. Did you have that also?
It's all the time. Oh, you're so lucky.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a nice guy. He's such a good, you know, whatever, man. Take such good care. I mean, it was all a facade. And,
you know what the funniest part is? Mine really thought he was such a great guy. And mine would tell everybody, I'm a great husband. I'm a great ex-husband. I'm a great father. And I'd be just shaking my head. He would make up stories as he went along.
Yeah, yeah. I know. And same, just singing his own, tooting his own horn, singing his own praises. And believing it all, you know, looking in the mirror like 50 times a day, you know. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, mine too. Mine thought he was so handsome all the time.
So,
he'd constantly
so
be looking in the mirror.
Right. How many times did I have to hear, aren't I so good looking? Am I good looking? Do you think I'm good looking? I'm like, I don't know. Whatever.
Well, mine knew he was good looking, and he would say, look how handsome I am.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one
yeah.
thing that threw me off, too, in the beginning, because we didn't know enough. But before I even got married to him, he did say to me, you know, when a gay man thinks that you're handsome, you're really handsome, because they only think, you know, the best-looking men are handsome because they're gay. And he said, and I always have gay men tell me that I'm handsome. And I thought that was a little strange because I don't know any other guys who really would tell me. Even I went with some really handsome guys. But nobody ever said to me, oh, gay men always tell me I'm handsome. So I always tell women, if you hear talk about gay, then there's a problem there already.
Mm-hmm.
Straight
That's
men
a red
don't
flag.
Talk gay talk.
Right. That's a red flag right there. Right?
That was
yeah.
a red flag. But, you know, I was stupid. What did I know? I just thought, well, that's nice. Gay men think he's handsome. I guess he is handsome. You know, well, I knew, you know, he was handsome. But, you know, nobody thought he was as good looking as he thought he was, because he was always saying, look how handsome I am. Look how good I look. You know, and he's at the gym day and night working out. You know, he had to have the best body. Was yours in the gym much?
Oh, my gosh. He lived at the gym. He was at the gym every day for hours. Hours. I wonder how he's making out during this pandemic. He's probably going through a gym withdrawal. But I think there's a lot of other things going on at the gym and the saunas with the men. And you know,
that's the biggest pickup for gay men is in a gym.
Yeah.
And you know, at first I didn't understand that because they're not in a gay gym; they're in straight gyms. And I would say, and you know, of course, once he was honest with me about being gay after our marriage was over, he would tell me everything. And he would say to me, he says, I prefer going to a straight gym because there the men are really looking for gay men. You know, that's where they hang out. And that's where he would hang out all the time, you know, meeting guys and hooking up in the steam room. And they would do all kinds of hookups he would tell me about.
He admitted to you, like he told you that.
After we were divorced.
Interesting. Yeah.
After we were divorced, there wasn't anything he didn't tell me. He told me everything. He told me way more than I was ever hoping to know. That's how I found out so much about gay life, from him.
Wow.
You know, how would I know? But he told me amazing things that panned out to be true.
Was he proud of it? I mean, why would he share that with you so, you know, abundantly? Was he proud of his new life?
Yeah, because he was a total narcissist who had to brag about everything wrong he was doing.
That's interesting.
You know, they
like, you
know, in their own sick minds, these guys, I'm not saying all gay guys, I'm just saying certain ones, you know, with certain personality disorders, you know, they want you to be impressed by their activities, as if that were going to impress me, you know. And no matter how often I would say, I really don't want to hear it, I'm really not interested in hearing the story, you know, he would laugh and make it like, you know, how great he can have all these conquests. And, you know, it was really sad.
I'm surprised he would share that. See, I totally cut off all ties. I mean, once, you know, after we went to court and got divorced, I honestly don't want anything to do with him anymore. So I, you know, moved across the country, and I will not even, if he ever even called or sent me a text message, I would continue to ignore anything. But I don't think he wants
to have
any.
Well, that's because you're much smarter than I am. I'm just being honest with you. You know, you're in better shape than I am. I wasn't emotionally able to ever totally cut free except for this couple of years. And I would have stayed free if he hadn't gotten sick, to be honest with you. I was doing really good at it. And I thought my life felt so much better not having him in it. But once again, we had an unusual situation where we lost both of our children. So it was easier to manipulate me. It was easier for him to say, we're all we have left of our children. They wouldn't want us to be fighting. They liked it when we were getting along. And, you know, we have no other people to share our memories with. And I was in a very vulnerable state, I'll be honest with you, because to me, the loss of both of my children within a couple of years just did me in. It really did. And I was just almost always thinking I'm going to give up already because, you know, waking up in the morning having to deal with that nightmare was horrible.
Oh, it's terrible.
And so, it wasn't that hard to manipulate me at that point. And that's why so many times when I wanted to say to him, screw you, I just let him babble on and I would do what I had to do. But I mean, there were times when I finally got sick of it, and I got sick of him putting me down and making me feel inadequate you know, with him, I don't know about yours, if he would ask you a question, if you didn't give him the right answer, he'd be screaming and cursing at you.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
he would ask a question, but he didn't want to hear the answer. Or, you know, he would just ask it and then not even listen to the response. Or if it wasn't the response he wanted, he would give me an argument. It was the same exact thing. Absolutely.
Yeah, mom would scream at me, call me dirty names, hang up the phone on me. You know,
yeah.
And call me all these dirty, filthy names. How dare I do this F and B? And, you know, talk to him like
absolutely.
That. Well, you ask me a question. If you don't want to hear the answer, why are you asking me?
Exactly.
You know, he would do it anyway. So, and it was like a trap every time. You know, either I would have to say, oh, you're absolutely right. Or else if I said anything other than that,
They get out of charge out of just seeing us suffer and seeing our pain, you know. It was like they wanted.
I really believe that.
Like they want a reaction from us so that they can feel good about themselves once again, you know. And, I would have the same problem all the time. Yep.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are married to that same man.
I think so.
The same man who has to have the same personality disorder traits.
Right, the one that doesn't think straight. We know that.
Exactly. I think if we've learned nothing else in this hour, it's that gay men don't think straight. And once
absolutely.
Again, this is no attack on any gay man. I mean, I don't think like a gay man because I'm a straight woman. I don't think like a lesbian woman because I'm a straight woman. People think differently. I don't know how they're thinking because they're gay. I just know we don't think in the same realm. And that's okay.
That's exactly.
People can be different. It's just when it enters your marriage, it's a whole other story, right?
Right, and own it, and own it, and take responsibility. Those are the main things, right?
And I think that's the bottom line. So now, you know, we're coming to the end of our hour. I just love talking to you, and I'm hoping you'll come back again. You know, after the holidays when we revamp the show again.
Happy holidays, and thank you for having me. And I'm looking forward to your book coming out.
Yeah, you know what? I am so appreciative for you sharing your story and the other women who shared their stories. I think we all need to make this connection because when you're going through the situation, it is so isolating. Don't you feel that way?
It definitely. And, you know, there are good days, there are bad days. And sometimes I wake up, I mean, between this pandemic and, you know, being married to a gay guy, getting divorced, going through this pandemic, it's just surreal. You know, I don't know what to believe and not to believe anymore, you know. And it's been an interesting, you know, 2.5 years. It's been a lot of things that don't add up. And
the longer you're in it and the more people you talk to and the more support you get, the more you realize that, you know, this is a life that so many people have to travel and the road we have to travel. And I think it's the connection to other people and seeing how they're handling it and that you're not alone in this and that we all go through this. We all go through these issues. And when you come back next time, I really want to discuss some of the issues with you, such as trust, rebuilding yourself again. How you get past all, you know, the falsehoods of your marriage and the lies that were told to you and rebuilding trust. So that's going to be our next time you're here. We're going to have that conversation if it's okay with you. So, Megan, again, thank you so much for taking the time for sharing your story.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Thank
you for having me.
All right, and I'll be in touch with you soon. All right, love to all our women. We'll be back next week. Have a good week. Bye-bye.